Accession number 8235, rule number 3.
Brigadier Scott, reel 3.
We were now to operate in a country which was quite different to where we'd been. Eritrea, which is one of Italy's oldest colonies, consists of desert on three sides with a well-watered plain in the centre. 7,000 feet up in the mountains lies the capital Asmara, and some 50 miles to the west, also in the hills, the dusty town of Keren, and this was our objective. But before reaching Keren, a formidable obstacle had to be overcome, as Keren is surrounded by rocky, precipitous mountains, some 6,000 feet above sea level. But it is the rise from the plain and valley below which gives the true position. For example, Mount Sanchal rose at almost sheer 2,500 feet, while Dolgorodok, which is lowest of the chain, was 1,500 feet, in places almost perpendicular. The road and railway line, the railway incidentally being of a different gauge to anywhere else in the world, wriggled their way from the western plain through a very narrow gorge, the Dongolus Gorge, on both sides of which towered almost perpendicular mountains. The gorge divided the mountain fortress into two ridge systems, which towered up from the Ascadero Valley. On the left was Cameron Ridge, Rajputana Ridge, Mount Sanchal, Bricks Peak, and on to Mount Samana. On the right of the gorge were the Pinnacle, Fort Dolgorodok, Lester and the Sphinx. On Dolgorodok was a well-built concrete fort with a road up to it, while the hills had been well wired with sangars built between the huge boulders, and this was especially the case of Sanchal, which also had a mule path up to it. The hill was a formidable fortress which the Italians quite justifiably considered impregnable, and they were manned by some of their best troops, such as Bersaglieri, Alpine, and Colonial troops, who fought very well indeed. The plain below was an arid desert covered with gaunt thorn scrub and tamarisk in the wadis. The hills were covered with leafless, stunted trees, not thick enough to give cover, but occasionally affording a rickety handhold for climbers, and outcrops of sheer rocks and boulders almost the size of houses. The country, in fact, had nothing to commend it. And of all places in which the division fought, this was probably the worst, and it was also one of the toughest campaigns. Is that right?
What was the climate like?
It was hot even in February, and even hotter in March, of course. And another problem was it was so dusty and generally, one might say, a scruffy country. And a lot depended on the health of the troops, a lot depended on the strict hygiene and the good medical arrangements we had.
What do you mean by strict hygiene? What sort of measures did you have to take that you wouldn't have to take elsewhere?
Well, now, if you were fell down or anything like that, you got a scratch or a wound, you had to attend to it pretty quickly, otherwise it went wrong very often. And a lot of our minor casualties, you might say, were caused by that. Just people damaging themselves in that way.
What about the supply of water?
It wasn't a great problem about water, except for the fact that it had to be carried. That was the greatest drawback, because as we went along the road, you came to villages, and they had wells and also proper water facilities, and we used those. and the sappers and miners are very good indeed in seams of the deep wells and boring wells, even bored wells. But the water, I don't think, was a great problem, except for the carriage of water.
Did it have to be purified before you could drink it?
Oh, yes, it had to be purified, be on the safe side, yes.
Did you see anything of the local population in Eritrea?
Not very much, because they kept more or less the villagers. And they came in quite useful, because the sappers and miners and the ordnance people used them as labour. And they liked doing it because they were quite well paid. And owing to the rather turmoil in the country, they were unemployed. So they really came in quite useful in that way. Otherwise, they didn't interfere with us.
How did your Indian soldiers adjust to fighting in this peculiar terrain?
They adjusted pretty well, because although it wasn't quite the same as mountain warfare in Northwest Frontier, which was pretty bare and very few little vegetation, but the hills, question of the climbing the hills and all that, well, they were used to it. Nearly all our troops were. They'd all been at the frontier at some time or other.
I'd like to ask you about your own battalion, although you were away from it in the initial phases. What was the strength of the 4th Battalion in the spring of 1941?
Spring of 1941, it was about 600 to 700, including 14 British officers and 24 Viceroy's commissioned officers.
And were you up to strength in officers and NCOs?
We were, yes.
And what was the organisation of the battalion?
In Eritrea, it was battalion headquarters, headquarter company, and 4 rifle companies. And, of course, there was no transport, because the transport was the troops themselves,
on their feet.
Part, on their feet.
Were they used to route marching and so on over long distances?
Oh yes, absolutely adept. It's, we never bothered to have a ambulance or anything like that behind when the battalion was marching. They were absolutely, they were very used to it, long distances in their own country.
What was the armament of the battalion?
At that time, as far as I can remember, we had the rifle companies had 1 2-pound anti-tank rifle per platoon, and headquarter company, there were four rifle companies, and headquarter company had a carrier platoon of 6 to 8 carriers, as Bren carriers, and a mortar platoon, I think was 6 3-inch mortars.
I understand that you supplemented the carrier platoon later on when you were in Italy.
Yes, we did. We had the headquarter company, or it was later called support company, was pretty flexible, constantly changing. And in Italy, at one time, we had 2 Sherman tanks, which were really no problem. The troops soon got to be able to handle them. We later had to, we acquired them because the reconnaissance regiment, the Central India Horse, for some reason at that time, which I don't remember, wasn't with the division. But later on we had to hand them back, of course, to the regiment.
I think you also said you had some medium machine guns that you'd picked up along the way.
That's right. We acquired some 6 medium machine guns, Vickers machine guns. And to man them, we had men from the rifle companies, those who had been in the old machine gun company, about 30 of them.
What about the medical services within the battalion?
We had two stretcher bearers per company, and of course the regimental aid post with a medical officer.
Did the soldiers have much idea of first aid?
All the soldiers had a basic, very basic training, that's all, very little.
But they could, I presume, put a dressing on a wound?
That's right, they could put a dressing on a wound and that sort of thing, but beyond that, they weren't trained in any other way.
And what was their general state of morale and discipline?
Oh, they were very high. In the establishment, laid-down establishment, there was a provost section. I think it was a section, or maybe a bit more. But we never, even in peacetime, we never had a provost. They were used as intelligence. The only time we had a provost in peacetime, as far as I remember, was in a sports meeting or something like that. Some of the chaps were detailed to be policemen.
What sort of sports did they like playing?
The game they liked playing best was hockey, and also basketball and football.
Were they able to play any of these games in Eritrea?
No, it was very no. I don't remember having any heavy opportunity of playing games.
I think you're also saying that you had a mixture of religious affiliations in the battalion.
Yes, we had one third of the battalion were Punjabi Muslims from the Punjab, and two thirds were from Rajasthan. Jats and Rajputs.
They were
Hindus.
Was there ever any friction between the two religious groups?
No, I never came across that in Bhutan.
Did they perform their religious observances?
Yes, they were, and they were extraordinarily good about it, and in the way that, for instance, if there's Ramadan in the hot weather, I'm now referring to one occasion when we were in Weissert Ridge. It was very hot, and Ramadan came on, and what we did was to help the Muslims out, which of course they weren't allowed to eat or drink from sunrise to sunset. And the rifle companies, the Hindu companies, always pitched in to help. But they never slackened off in their own work, or despite the fact they were not eating and drinking, they could do a route march or do anything you like. They were absolutely first class like that. And it was very good the way the Hindu companies, Rajputs and Jats, always helped them, and vice versa, when the Hindus had a festival of some kind.
What sort of festivals did the Hindus have to observe?
They didn't have, of course, the system of fasting all that period. But they had Dussehra and festivals like that. But that really didn't interfere very much with their duties. And of course, in both cases, their religion allowed them, while on active service, not to keep these observances.
They had dispensations.
They had dispensations, but they didn't very often. They didn't bother about that. Sometimes they kept it.
Did they have mullahs in the battalion?
Yes, we had pundits and movies. Pandits for the Hindus, movies for the Muslims. But they were, of course, I don't remember them being up in the operational areas at all. Pretty much a family affair. Most Indian Army battalions were the same. It's the same. It went back to, for instance, with if any recruit joined, you had a bunch of recruits joining. You always knew that, or found out that so and so was had an uncle in the battalion, or so and so was a cousin in the battalion. It's all very much a family affair.
So this family tradition would give cohesion?
It gave, yes, great cohesion. Anyway, that's one reason why you had very little disciplinary trouble at all. Very little.
When you did have it, what was it normally caused by? What were the prevalent things that could go wrong?
You had very little what might call petty crime. For instance, things like being late for parade or things like that, you didn't have. What you did have was people coming back absent from leave, family affairs, things like that. But otherwise, crime was really very, very small. Very small.
So you're saying that it's only if there were social problems at home that, that they're inclined to be late coming back?
That's right.
So it's not really a military matter at all, is it?
Well, it was in a way which was supposed to... late for coming back from leave or absent from your duties. And as a matter of comparison, when I was in the South Waziristan Scouts, although the discipline was quite different in there, if you were had to go on leave and you were told to come back on a certain day, no excuses whatever were taken. You were none whatever, no matter what has happened in your social life.
What happened when you started to advance into Eritrea?
The general plan was, now in cooperation with our 15th Division, the idea was that the 14th Division would go by the northern route, which meant via Keru and onto Agadat. Keru was about 60 miles from Keren and about 20 miles from Agadat, while 5th Indian Division took the southern road from Tessenai to by Akota and onto Agadat. The enemy, in our opinion, should be much more aggressive because they had a very good base in the hills, and we were surprised that they hadn't advanced right up as far as Port Sudan and that they hadn't really made an effort to hold Kassala in strength. And the result was that we advanced from Kassala beyond, right up to Keru, without any fighting at all, or just little small skirmishes. The first real fighting took place at Keru. Now, Keru was a gorge which we had to get through. The road had to get through Keru. And on both sides, it was quite strongly held on the hills on both sides. However, after some stiff fighting, we did get them off. But one of the main reasons was that the 15th Division's advance to the south of them, made them retreat.
So they were being outflanked.
So they were in fear of being outflanked.
When you were in the advance down the road, what was the road like? Was it a good road?
Yes, the Italians always made good roads, but of course they're also very good at blowing up the roads, and we were held up a great deal by delaying tactics, the roads being blocked and mined. And we often came across great boulders going to the mining, and this held us up quite a lot.
What sort of formation was the division in for the advance?
Only one brigade at a time really could take the advance, because owing to the conditions of the road, the logistics from the road and road point of view. But beyond that, it was just a question of smaller units, really, fighting between smaller units, not on a large divisional scale.
How did you actually get them out of their positions on either side of the gorge at Cairo? Did you have to assault them?
We had to assault them, also by the usual tactics of on both sides there were hills, and gradually infiltrating behind the hills. And now this was the first time on which we encountered the small red hand grenade, because once you got to fairly close contact, close quarters of the enemy, they threw these little red hand grenades, which were very light, and you could throw them easily about 50 yards, and they were very effective at close quarters. They didn't, they weren't too lethal, but they caused an awful lot of casualties from wounds. And here again, there seemed to be no enemy patrols, no aggressive patrols out in front.
What sort of troops did they have holding the positions at Cairo? Have you any idea of what numbers they had?
I think at Cairo there was a brigade strength. And here we also came across a way of enemy equipment, heavy mortars and their mules and their mountain artillery, and for the first time the light tanks. Now these light tanks were really not up to the effectiveness of our heavily armoured tanks. In fact, on one occasion, I think it was the Camerons, one of their anti-tank rifles stopped an enemy light tank.
Did they attempt to use them in a counter-attack then at Cairo?
Yes, they were used in a counter-attack at Cairo, and we brought up our I tanks.
So the I-tanks dealt with the Italian light tanks, and meanwhile your infantry were going round the sides of the positions.
Infiltrating round the backs, yes, behind.
What sort of positions did they have?
They had the positions wired in, and they rather like what we were to meet again later on in their main position. They built sungas, in other words, fortified walls with wire, which were very difficult positions to attack, especially going up right up a slope.
How long did it take then to clear the positions at Cairo?
As far as I remember, it took about a day and a half.
So it's quite a long fight.
Quite a long fight, yes.
It sounds like they resisted quite
strongly. They fought very well. They had the colonial troops fought very well.
Did you take many prisoners?
We didn't take so many prisoners on that occasion, no. It was later on that we really took quite a lot of prisoners.
What was the reaction within the division to this resistance at Cairo? Did it take you by surprise?
I don't think it took us by surprise, really. But on the other hand, it was our first acquaintance with a very difficult country which we were going to operate in and fight later on, because we knew Cairo was just one of the smaller operations. Later on, we were going to really have a difficult task.
Well, I was thinking that because you'd found it easy to deal with the Italians in the Western Desert, we might have expected them to be easier to push off.
Yes, that is so, but we didn't. You were quite right. We were, right at that point, we were rather surprised. They certainly fought better in Eritrea than they did in the desert.
So what happened then next after Cairo? You just resumed the advance, presumably, down the road.
Yes, then we, the next, having overcome Cairo, we then went on to the next obstacle was Agadat. We had Agadat. The two greatest obstacles were Mount L'Aquitat and Mount Cochin. These were a sheer 1,500 feet above ground level. And it took the division 4 days, from 27th to the 31st of January, before we captured Agadat. And I think I ought to note here that the speed of advance was from the concentration area at Deir el-Deb onto the foot of Cairn only took 14 days, which is very, very quick going, considering the fighting we had to do on the way.
What sort of tactics did you employ at Agadat?
The tactics at Agadat were to capture these two mountains. That was the key to the position. And of course, there again, there was the threat of the 5th Indian Division pressing on. So we kept up the pressure. And there was very heavy fighting to take these two mountains. And there again, the enemy fought very well.
Did you have very heavy casualties at Agadat?
Yes, we did. That's the first time we really started to have heavy casualties.